Good morning, everybody. This is the KPK Outdoor Show. I'm Bob Sims. Thank you for tuning in this Saturday morning. The salmon fishing out in the ocean has bounced back once again. This is the second time we've gone through a lull, and the second time it has bounced back. But I have to say, and this is a small thing, but it could be an indication after all, it is the time that they begin to come up the river, that each time it bounces back, it's not quite to the level of our terrific summer down off the Golden Gate. Although the party boats are getting mostly limits, the six-packers all seem to be getting limits. It may take a little longer. There may be a few less fish. It's rotating now a little bit more with days where most of the fish are the schoolie size, you know, a little bit smaller in size. Other days, you get half of your fish in the teens, maybe over 20. Some of those bigger fish are going to head up the rivers. That's all there is to it. And, of course, the river fishermen claim, well, with slow down, they're on their way. And the ocean fishermen say, well, it just slowed down. It'll bounce back. And they're both kind of right. But we'll wait and see. We'll have reports on both areas. And as you'll see, there is definitely a change taking place. And nothing red hot by any means, but there's definitely more fish in the rivers right now. And even though they don't catch a lot of fish in the lower river when the water's so warm, when a school moves through, that's when they're the most aggressive. You got a lure down there like a big spinner, you got a shot. Okay, then the school's gone. You get a couple of fish in an area, and word gets around, and the next day there's 30 boats there, but the fish are gone the next day. They're moving. They're not hanging out in 72-degree water. They're taking off for cooler climbs, so to speak. Anyway, we will. One of the things we're going to talk about today is there's a big Poudre Creek thing coming up. It's a film festival, but it's more than that, and it's all designed to help restore Poudre Creek. Now, for years and years and years, Poudre Creek coming out of Lake Berryessa, it wound down through the hills there. There was limited public access until it got to Lake Solano, and then below that, it was not a trout stream anymore. And, of course, it was a trout stream because of the cool water. But it was managed as a, put and take, mostly in the summer. Fish and Game planted it. It wasn't a very good fishery. And in the winter, a few fishermen that knew what they were doing would go out and get a few big rainbows. Anyway, it was just a lack of attention by the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Nothing was happening. And while I was resentful when it went into a wild trout designated stream, catch and release only barbless hooks, I think I've changed my mind, because what has happened is they have really put a lot of effort into the habitat and into the access. And now there's close to 3,000 trout per mile in that section of river. And in this day and age, teaching a kid, if you're going to take your kid to catch a wild trout and then release it, isn't all that bad an idea. The way it was just shameful. But anyway, we'll get a little an interview with the president of the Fly Fishers of Davis, and this should be of concern to all fishermen. You don't have to fly fish Poudre Creek. You just have to go along with the barbless hook, catch and release, artificial lures. And now all of a sudden we've got a much better year-round fishery. You just can't keep any fish, but that's a small price to pay. So we thought we'd pay a little attention to that because it's a very worthwhile project. And then Paul Berlinger, the same guy that did this, he happened to mention to me that he just went on a little bucket list fishing trip, and one of those places he fished was Yellowstone. And what he did there and how he went about it and what he caught. So I thought that would be interesting. A lot of us have been to Yellowstone. I went there for the first time last year and drooled over all those rivers. So we'll talk to Paul about how he caught some of those cutthroat. Anyway, back in California, Eagle Lake is just on the verge of changing a little bit, meaning when the nighttime temperatures cool off consistently, those fish start to make little moves into the shoreline. As it is now, the fish are spread out, and they have their favorite spots, but we'll check with Val Aubrey, because as she mentioned last week, last year we had to relearn how to fish Eagle Lake because of this type of algae that formed during the drought. Water temperature seems to make less of a difference, and depth, you know, visibility seems to make more of a difference. And we'll see if that continues into the fall, but the water should clear up, should be even better fishing than last year, which was not a good year. But we'll check with Val about that. Also, we'll do a little roundup, what's going on in the Upper Sacramento River, the McLeod, the Fall River, Hat Creek. Are there any steelhead coming up the Trinity? Are there any salmon coming up the Trinity? This last week, ending Thursday afternoon, it took just about a week for them to increase releases to over 2,000 feet per second. Norm is about 400. And for the ceremonial dance down on the Hooper Reservation at Tishtang, a historical Indian village there, and they do this every couple of years. Well, that water benefits it. It'll pull steelhead in from the ocean on the Klamath River, but it kind of wipes out the fishing up above. And unfortunately, this year, we can only fish for salmon on the Trinity till the end of this month, the 31st. So we have 1 week to go try to catch a salmon in the Trinity. We'll see what happens, because there was no results as of then, but we'll check on that. Back out in the ocean, we'll tell you exactly where the boats are going. Kind of interesting. Usually the salmon are more concentrated now. They're still spread out from north to south. That's a sign that we're just running late this year. And so that should be good news to the river fishermen that are a little getting impatient. But we'll talk to R.J. Walden, who skippers the Sundance out of Emeryville. We will check with Mike Bogue on the Upper Sacramento River about if the salmon fishing is improving there. Trout fishing has been fabulous. We'll check with Rob Reimers on the Feather. Definitely salmon fishing is picking up there. We're having more good days now. Keeping them on the hook seems to be a problem for everybody. There's a Fishing in the City program today. Don Paganelli will join us later on and tell us about that. Of course, Mark Wilson will be out telling us about his striper escapades. I got out Wednesday. I'll tell you about that. We'll also cover the North Coast up in the ocean and steelhead in the Klamath and Lake Almanor. Not so much the lake itself, but all the streams coming in to Lake Almanor. They can provide pretty good fishing in the middle of summer. So all that coming up in the next 2 hours and 45 minutes on the KFBK Outdoor Show. Thanks for being here. Welcome back, finally. Good Lord. Anyway, so Fort Bragg, the salmon season is open up there, of course. They designed to open it when they knew there weren't going to be a ton of salmon around to protect the salmon. Too bad, because Fort Bragg can be a fun place to go in July, where you have such a combination, you know, salmon, rockfish, lingcod, and tuna if the weather holds up on the outside. But they are catching a few fish, so let's talk to Barry Canavero about the latest. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Bob.
So you got at least one nice big fish this week, huh?
Yeah. You know, salmon fishing, if you're really into it here, you got to go every morning, the first thing in the morning. They get them on real close in the rocks off the reef. And we have a spot that we've been going that's short of that, and we seem to do okay there too. But you're not catching a lot of fish. There's no such thing as limits. There is maybe if you're a private boater and you're only one person. Now, one guy got limits. He got two.
Mm-hmm.
one of the party boats, the best that I've heard that he's the only one that fishes. There's only one on the Seahawk that he fishes salmon. And he got like 7 one day, and he said he dropped that many. And that was really good.
Yeah.
And but, you know, here one day it's great as far as the weather goes. The next day it's blowing either from the south or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, yesterday wasn't fishable. The day before was. You could go, but it's not really fishable.
Yeah, it's just been one of those years, that's all.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we didn't miss fishing in July because you couldn't have fished anyhow.
Yeah.
But anyhow, thank God we got tuna, and we got rock cod and ling cod. We had one ling cod trip this week, and we went down south a little ways. Did pretty good. We had
your secret spot.
A secret spot. Because I said that, this guy called me and books for this, and he's after your show last week. I got to tell you, I had 5 calls and we booked 3 charters. And
good.
But this one here was a special one. This was Jim Martin's son.
Oh, for crying out loud!
I know. And
of course, Jim passed away quite a few years ago, but I think some people will remember him because for years and years in Outdoor Life magazine, Jim was the Western editor, and he covered the whole Western United States for Outdoor Life. And he lived up in Greenville, and he was a good friend of Bell Lang's, and he did a lot of things. I remember, aside from fishing and everything, he loved to teach people how to gold pan. And he would come down to Sacramento. They'd go over to Watt Avenue or Howe Avenue, and he would actually find some color in the pan for people that wanted to learn how to do it. And he delighted in it. He was a good guy.
Yeah. Well, we had a fun day, and he did. He was a good friend with Bill Lang, and I got to tell my story about Pardee, how I hated Bill Lang because he got to go to Pardee 2 weeks before the season ever opened.
Yeah, right.
Anyhow, so we had a fun day with them, and they got their limits of ling cod and some really nice, got one big vermilion and some capazones, and it was a fun day. And then now we're off to the tuna grounds. We've got the next 3 days, according to the National Weather Forecast, flat calm. I mean, flat calm is 4 foot every 8 seconds. That's flat calm.
Yeah.
And so we're shooting for tuna. We're going tomorrow and Tuesday. We got a salmon trip on Wednesday. And I think we're going to put it on the trailer and come home.
Wow.
So
what if you just knocked the heck out of the albacore and the salmon bite turns on? You're still going to come home?
Well, let's put it this way. We've got 3 days. We got Sunday, Monday, Tuesday of good weather. Wednesday goes to crap again. So, yeah, I'm ready to come home.
Yeah.
We're ready to see the Delta. We'll be fishing striper, salmon, sturgeon. We won't fish sturgeon, though, until the water cools down a little bit. We'll start right off with stripers, and we'll be working out of Isleton. So we'll be back. It'll take us a few days. We're going to probably have to double trip it. We have to take the house trailer one time and the boat one time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Usually I have a friend that does that, but he's on vacation. So we'll probably bring the boat home and then come back and get the house trailer. And then,
okay. How big's your house trailer? How big's your trailer?
28 foot.
Oh, 28. Oh, that's pretty good size.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we live in it. We've been in it since the 15th.
Yeah. Better be 28 foot if you're going to spend all summer in it.
Because it's got a good TV in it. We can watch the Oakland A's.
Yeah.
Anyhow, tonight we'll watch the Raiders, too.
That's right.
But, you know, it's been a tough season. We ended out okay by getting this ton of trips on the end. And so we will end up doing 5 tuna trips, which doesn't sound like a lot. But people got out earlier this week under conditions that you would say I wouldn't go, but they went. And some guys did good. Some guys didn't do good. And so the water is all mixed up out there. We think we're going to go about 40 miles. We're not sure for sure. We're going to head in one direction, and when we find the breaks and the good water, then we'll drop them in.
Yeah.
So it's been a good ton of year up here, except for the weather. I mean, we lost out. The tuna started showing up in end of June, and we were wiped out almost for the whole month of July for weather, and the fish stayed there. Then we got out. We got out for 4 days, and it was good fishing. I mean, good fishing. I'm not we don't go for the 40, 50, 60 fish and then try to give them away or throw them away. We try to get 2 to 3 fish per person. And this way, you know, people walk off the boat with all these bags of tuna, you know, of loins. There's 4 loins to each tuna.
Yeah.
And they don't know what to do with it unless they can, or, you know, you don't want to freeze.
That's plenty. That's plenty.
Oh, it's plenty. And so it'll be fun. Actually, our trip tomorrow, people that went with us once before, they must have had such a great time when I put it out on Facebook. They called up right away. Sunday's still open. I said, yeah, I had to move my Sunday trip to Tuesday. Okay, I'll take it. I'll take the boat. I said, okay, you got it.
They get, the tuna fishermen are reminding me more and more of like bass fishermen and duck hunters.
Yeah.
They're really obsessed with stuff.
Yeah. So anyhow, it'll be good. And actually, we're probably both looking kind of forward to coming home.
Yeah.
It's been a long season.
Hey, Barry, we have to mention for those that, for the skippers up there and for the people up there, you got to realize, everybody, that probably the nicest weather month of the year up there is October. And that's when some of the best fishing occurs for the rockfish and lingcod. And if this is like most Octobers, you can pretty much count on it. Of course, with this weather pattern we've had this year, it's anybody's guess, but that can be just a wonderful time over on the coast.
Yeah, well, you know, this year here, they'll go to unlimited depth in November and December.
Right.
And, you know, before the rock cod season closed before Labor Day or Labor Day, and it never went on.
Yeah.
So how would you know how the weather was unless you were going out doing a crab trip?
Exactly, yeah.
And
of course, I'm going way back. I mean, when...
Oh, I know. I wouldn't chance the weather this year to stay any longer. I think we'll come home and fight the wind in the Delta.
Yeah, and you'll get it.
Oh,
it was there Wednesday when I was down there.
I know. I talk to Diana all the time, and she's, oh, my God, it's so windy. But she says, it's nice, you know. It's, you know, where we live, she sits out on the patio, and it blows on. It's really nice. So we're ready to come home.
Yeah. Okay, Barry. Well, we'll see what your final week up there checks out like next Saturday. Good luck.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Barry Canavero, Fish Hookers. Sport fishing. If you want to see if you can get squeezed in there for a trip, call them at 916-870-4225. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about tuna fever and some steelhead on the North Coast. Don't go away. Welcome back. Welcome back. Well, you know, it's amazing. Up on the Klamath River, normally, it would just be the talk of the state because this is the time that the salmon just really, I mean, really come into the lower Klamath. And there's guides there, and the motels are full, and the guides are booked up. And, I mean, it's just quite a time. Most people are there to fish for salmon. But with the salmon come the steelhead. And a lot of these salmon guides also fish for steelhead. Then you have the fly fishing. And then the fly fishing guides, they can really get into these fish, especially the half-pounders. And then you get the adults mixed in where you can go out and still have a 15 to 30 fish day. Now, some of these half-pounders may be only 13 or 14 inches, but you're using a fly rod. And then all of a sudden, a 4-pounder grabs it. And then all of a sudden, you're not in control of anything. But that's what happens. Without being able to fish for salmon, the river's basically deserted, except for a few fly fishermen looking for steelhead. So it's really a shame, and when you think of the amount of salmon that used to come up that river. Of course, we think of the same thing in the Sacramento River. You know, the salmon are in a lot of trouble, and you know, 99% of it is caused by water diversions and using water for something other than our natural resources. And I don't care. I'm not trying to get into an argument here. That's just a fact. I mean, you can correlate. The more water they take out, the worse the salmon. The worse the salmon run is 3 years later. That's all there is to it. Up on the Klamath, you have pretty much the same situation. You have farmers and fishermen and Indian tribes fighting for the water. And the Bureau of Reclamation has been incapable its entire existence of coming to a good compromise. And back in the 90s and early 2000, they proved it by 1 year giving all the waters to the farmers and killed tens of thousands of salmon. And the next year they gave all the water to the fish, and a lot of farmers almost went broke. Well, that's really a good job. Anyway, then you have how many salmon are really taken there? Now, how many salmon are taken off the coast that are designated for the Klamath River? I mean, well up in the Oregon, these fish school up and down the coast as far south as San Francisco, so you don't know if you're catching Salmon River, Klamath River fish. And then you get up there, and how many river fishermen take fish? And then you've got three different Indian tribes that have almost unlimited fishing rights up there with the gill nets and everything. And it's not regulated, except it's self-regulated. So there's a lot of question marks. But it's a shame that the salmon have come to a state of barely being able to exist in that river when it's such a rich river. And we've all experienced salmon from the top to the bottom of that river, tens of thousands of them. And now it doesn't look good. But the steelhead are still there. And up there, they also have tuna fever. And so for that kind of information, we go to Kenny Priest, who writes for the Times Standard in Eureka. Kenny, I know the salmon fishing is closed up there, even in the river, so we can't talk about that. But we were hoping we'd get some consistency with the steelhead, because we had one really good week up there. It was a lot of fish and nice big fish, too. What's happening now?
You know, there's just not a lot of pressure. You know, I know people are going up there and they're fly fishing, and you know, there's a few people who are taking advantage of the quiet river and who are out catching steelhead. You know, and I've heard there's a heck of a lot of half pounders in the river. You know, and some nice adults, but there's just, you know, you're not going to have that pressure of all the guide boats. But there are some people, you know, in private boats who are going up there and doing some fly fishing, and you know, basically you could have the river to yourself. Which is pretty nice. And just to mention, the Trinity River is still open to salmon fishing.
So yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that'll be open through next Thursday. So that will close on September 1st.
Yeah. Of course, this last week hasn't been good because they raised the water flow that like they do every 2 years for the ceremony down at Tishtang on the Hoopa Indian Reservation.
Yes, they had the boat dance, so yeah. They had a pretty good water shot out of there. So
yeah.
It's all gone now, but you know, should be back to normal.
Well, that could help maybe bring more steelhead up the Klamath, too.
Well, it's going to help bring all the fish up the Klamath. You know, it's going to help bring the whatever salmon there are, they're going to bring those in, and it's going to bring some steelhead in for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that natural flow of water there, that pulse they get, they're going to feel that and come on up.
Yeah. So we'll just have to wait and see. I'm sure that some fly fishing guides are being kept busy up there. But it just shows you how many people, the guides just aren't around because they make their living on salmon. That's it.
They do. I mean, there are a few guys who really, you know, target the steelhead fishermen, and you're right. Those guys are going to do well, and I'm sure they're out there, you know, but the guides, they make their living on salmon. This time of year is really all about salmon. You know, you do catch an occasional, sometimes you'll have phenomenal steelhead days, but it's really the salmon that really pays those guys' bills.
What's going on with the rockfish? Last time we talked, it was pretty rough out there.
It is, but it's starting to lay down. So it looks like this weekend, actually, like Sunday, I think is the day. I know a lot of boats are going out of Fort Bragg, Shelter Cove, and also Eureka for tuna. So they're kind of all converging on the same area. I think it's around Gorda is where they're talking about. So the ocean looks like it's going to be nice for 3 days, and I know a lot of boats that are going to be headed for tuna.
How far out are they?
Well, from Eureka, I think it's about 60 miles, but I think it's about 30 miles out of Gorda.
Okay.
So it's not a far trip from Shelter Cove or even Fort Bragg. I don't think it's that far either. So
well,
there's warm water.
I heard they're 40 miles out from Fort Bragg, at least 40 miles.
I would say 40 miles tops. So it's actually closer than that.
Okay.
So, you know, right around there, you know, it depends. And Shelter Cove is I think, around 30 miles or so from what I heard.
All right.
One
last question. What about what about Pacific and California halibut?
California halibut is still going strong. You know, I think there's a lot of fish in there. So I think the bite slowed a little bit. We had some pretty big tides last week. So I don't think those fish bite when there's a lot of water surging in or out. They seem to want to kind of hunker down a little bit. So
that's exactly right. Well, it's hard to make a good drift or anything else. But like in the bay, the slower tides are always better for halibut.
Exactly. So yeah. They can see your bay. You know, they're not trying to, you know, hold themselves in the current. So that's when they go on feed mode. So yeah. We had some pretty rough tides, some pretty big tides. So the bite wasn't as good. But, you know, those guys are still going out and, you know, basically catching a lot of shorts, catching limits of keeper size, and it's still going well.
And Pacific?
So it's next Friday. So September 1st, it'll be open. We have about a third of the quota left to go, and so that will be open through October 31st, or if we meet the quota, it will close.
Okay, first of all, we were talking about the California halibut that's so good up there. That's in Humboldt Bay. And then we're talking about the Pacific halibut, which the season opens and closes up there on a bi-monthly basis. But now it's going to open until through the end of October unless they reach the quota. Now, the quota is 34,000 pounds. They're now at 23,000 pounds. So as soon as 11,000 pounds of Pacific halibut are caught, it will be closed. And if the fishing can get good, all of a sudden, that weight isn't quite as much as it seems. You can read Kenny's column every Thursday by going to fishingthenorthcoast.com. He's a licensed guide. He's got a real passion for salmon and steelhead. You can call him at 707-496-8671. We will be back with Mr. Dan Bacher in just a moment. Well, the guy that has been at the Fish Sniffer longer than the Fish Sniffer has been in existence is Mr. Dan Bacher, who covers every important issue to people like us, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Thank you very much, Bob.
You're welcome. I remember when it started in a garage in Knight's Landing.
No, actually, it started on a kitchen table in Woodland.
Oh, Woodland, was that it?
At Hal and Winnie Bonsalt's house.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Oh, right. Close.
Yeah.
You got the right county.
Knight's Landing fits in there somewhere, doesn't it?
Not really.
Not really. Okay, well, you know, the years take their toll, Dan.
Yeah. Well, it's close. It's a yellow county, so.
Okay,
I wanted to do an update on the avalanche of lawsuits that hit the state of California, starting last Friday and then ending on Monday. And Alex Breitler of the Stockton Record did a very good service for everybody by posting all the lawsuits that he could find up on his blog at Alex Breitler Environment Dog. That's blog.eastsanjoaquin, San Joaquin River Delta. And So if people have a whole bunch of time this weekend or Labor Day weekend to read all the lawsuits, they're there in one spot. But I would like to go through just to illustrate how many lawsuits are against us. First of all, there's a total of 18.
18.
Okay. By 80 parties. And these are, it's just a, I mean, it's a kind of, the question is, who didn't file a lawsuit against the violation of the California Environmental Quality Act by the Department of Water Resources in its plan to build the Delta Tunnels? Okay, we got Anderson Cottonwood Irrigation District, City of Antioch, City of Brentwood, Butte County, all the Delta counties, along with Delta Farmers, East Bay Municipal.
Including Sacramento County.
Yeah, I'm going to go through.
Okay.
There's a, I mean, it's an amazing list.
Okay.
East Bay Municipal Utility District, cities of Folsom and Roseville, San Juan Water District, suburban Sacramento Water District, Glen Colusa Irrigation District, and a bunch of other Sacramento Valley water districts. And then, as I talked about last week, the lawsuit by the North Coast Rivers Alliance Commercial Fishing Groups and the Winnemem-Wintu Tribe, Placer County Water Agency, North Delta Water Agency, then a big lawsuit by a bunch of groups, fishing and environmental groups, by that included Restore the Delta, Friends of Stone Lakes National Wildlife Refuge, Save Our Sandhill Cranes, California Sport Fishing Protection Alliance, and the California Water Impact Network, and another separate lawsuit by the city of county or the city of Sacramento, one by the Sacramento County, another one by the Sacramento Municipal Utility District, the Sacramento Regional County Sanitation District, the Save the California Delta Alliance, finally, the city of Stockton. Now, did anybody in Northern California not sue them? I mean, this illustrates what a terrible project it is. I mean, this is a real diverse group.
Governor Brown's outreach evidently was lacking in certain areas.
And meanwhile, the Food and Water Watch and Restore the Delta have been organizing in Southern California, because all the different water board meetings are meeting to decide whether to vote on the tunnels, and there's a lot of opposition because Fitch Ratings, along with economists and along with many ratepayers, concluded that the water rates will go up substantially if the Delta tunnels are built and people aren't going to get any new water. So this, you know, in my opinion, it just shows that there's no justification for this project. But the the bottom line again, when everything comes down to it, is that this is a project that's based on the assumption that you're going to both restore the Delta ecosystem and provide water supply, make it more reliable by taking two twin tunnels, diverting more water from the Sacramento River.
He says we won't be diverting anymore, but we know all that's BS.
Yeah. You don't build tunnels with 9,000 CFS capacity, you know, unless you plan at least at some time to divert what is the entire flow of the Sacramento River when the river is low.
Yeah. Well, so, all it takes is a vote of the legislature, and boom, it's done.
Yeah, this thing could have been over, but it's very clear that Governor Brown wants this as his legacy.
Yeah. You know, remember, I can't remember how many years back it's been. We were talking back then that when this thing, if it ever reaches a point where it looks like it really is going to be built. Watch the lawsuits come in, and here's what look what happened.
And this is just the start of them.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And Bill Jennings from the California Sport Fishing Alliance, he quipped that Delta fisheries may be collapsing, but one species doing well on the Delta is attorneys. and he's one, and he's representing one of the groups. The California Sport Fishing Protection Alliance.
Well, we said there's going to be a bunch of attorneys that'll get rich off of this.
Yes.
Okay, hey Dan, that's a wonderful reply. That's good news, really. Just to show the opposition is entire and runs the gamut of the entire North State. So,
right.
Thank you, Dan.
Okay, thanks.
Dan Bacher of the Fish Sniffer. We'll be back with a great salmon report, or at least a salmon report on the Feather River. Stay with us. Welcome back to the second hour of the KFPK Outdoor Show. I'm Bob Sims, every Saturday from 5 to 8 right here on KFPK, 1530 a.m. and 93.1 FM. Well, we talked about salmon fishing earlier, and that while it's not red hot any place in the rivers, it is improving. Of course, we've been saying that every week, but as far as action, maybe not fish landed. Well, that to an extent, but the number, the amount of action they're getting, for example, on the Feather has definitely picked up. That can be good news and bad news, especially if you lose a fish. But Rob Reimers, as usual, of Rustic Rob's Guide Service, is on top of it, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
So you had some exciting and some frustrating times this week, huh?
Yeah, it's been an interesting week. We already had one fish on this morning. We got him about halfway in, and it come off on us, and we just had another slap.
Well, you know, last week, excuse me for interrupting, but when you were on last week, I says, well, if you do any good before the end of the show, text me. And you texted me before we got off the air photos of two salmon you'd landed and a story of one that got away. So it began then.
Yeah, it's been a pretty strange week. We had those three on last Saturday, then I come out the next day on Sunday, and we went on 0-for-7. We had everything go wrong. I mean, we had slaps and takedowns and fish on that wrapped around other lines, and everything that could happen. And then, so we went 0-for-7 that day. Then we went out a couple days later. We had a pretty good day. We got three fish in the boat, lost a couple other ones. And then had another strange day out here Thursday. We went 0-for-6.
So you had six hits and you couldn't get a fish in the boat.
No, couldn't get one in the boat.
Oh, good Lord.
That day we had three on flatfish and three on roe, you know, but so we were there hitting everything out here Thursday, but we couldn't get one in the dang boat to save our hiney.
What was the problem, you think?
The fish just weren't cooperating. But right now, I think
that's very polite of you to say that a good portion of it was probably operator error.
Yeah. part of it was
that's
operator.
Okay.
And
come
the
on.
The fish are just kind of coming up and just sort of, they're not taking it real hard. They're just sort of grabbing it and dropping back with it in their mouth. So
well, usually when they grab it, you just lean back on the rod, and that's enough to set the hook. But when they don't grab it, you got to be ready to set the hook, and you can't always do that lightly.
Yeah. Huh. We got a boat right on us up here. Okay. So what were we saying? I got distracted for a second.
Save yourself.
Yeah, I had to save myself. You almost cut my anchor rope.
Okay. Anyway, so has it been an early bite, Rob?
It has been. Most of our bites have come on plugs early, you know, like from the time we start fishing until about 8 o'clock or so. And then it seems like the roe bite's starting to pick up after that. So when the sun gets up higher and it's on the water good, then, the roe bite starts taking off.
Okay. Huh. Is the river getting crowded?
Oh, yeah, it's crowded. There's a lot of people up here.
Yeah. Well, that's where...
Starting to make the Shanghai Falls look pretty good.
Yeah. Are people fishing both above and below the falls?
The falls, yeah, they're starting to pick up a few down there on spinners. It's not, you know, red hot by any means. It's not as good as it is up here, but my deckhand picked one up yesterday down there because we didn't fish, and I seen Bob Bookie picked one up down there. So, I mean, they're starting to pick up some fish on spinners down there.
Okay.
Trolling them downstream.
Blue foxes.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, I mean, the reason it's crowded is because there's fish there.
Yeah, or there's people wanting them anyway.
Yeah, you bet. You
but
bet.
There are getting to be quite a few fish here. And it seems like it's getting better all the time.
What's the flow on a river right now?
I'm not sure, but I heard they're going to kick it up to 12,000, which is going to be...
Oh, my goodness. That's going to wipe it out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we're afraid of.
What's the reasoning there?
Oh, they just want to drain the lake down. They're not getting it down fast enough or whatever. So they want to pump a lot more water out.
Another miscue by the Department of Water Resources.
Exactly.
Yeah. I hear they're dumping a whole bunch of gravel in the river now to make up for the lost gravel that was washed out by the spillway problem.
Well, there you go. They dump all that gravel in there, and now they're going to up the flows and wash you down.
Nobody can make decisions like government, especially in California. So, hey, any steelhead showing up?
I don't know of any, but there probably is some steelhead in the river.
There always is with the salmon, you know.
Yeah. Especially up here, there's got to be some. Up in the low flow,
yeah,
I'm sure there's some. But, you know, I haven't been up there because we can't salmon fish up there.
Yeah. And besides, they probably a small group of people keeping their mouths shut and catching a few fish because the feather gets an earlier run, just like salmon of steelhead.
Yeah.
And it can be good at times this year. Just got to go check it out. Okay, Rob, what portion of the river is producing fish from the After Bay outlet down? How far down are you going to and still stay in the riffles and still catch fish?
Well, I would say you can go down and hit the holes all the way down to Gridley Bridge.
Okay.
You know, I mean, the more you go up, the better it seems to be, but
probably
you know, be starting to stack up and back up.
Yeah. Do you think it would be water temperature?
Not so much because it's 65 degrees where I'm sitting, which isn't, you know, horribly cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's not bad, but, you know.
Better than...
I'm sure it's going to cool down a bunch when they start upping these flows.
Yeah. It's better than 72 degrees in the Sacramento River.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that has a lot to do with kind of like the American River was earlier this year, you know. I think that's what gets the fish turning up here a lot is that cool water.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it sounds like you you already lost one fish this morning. You're on your way. Keep your eyes open so you don't get run over.
Yeah.
Thanks for the report, Rob. Good luck this week.
Okay. Thank you.
Take
See you later. Easy.
Bye. Rob Reimer's trying to run the boat while he's talking to me on the air. That's pretty good. His number to book a trip, 530-632-0051. He catches as many fish as anybody in that river. You can tell he loves it and he works hard at it. After the break, Mr. Scott Laceth, don't go away. He goes so many places, I can't keep track of him. I mean, I thought he was deer hunting a couple of weeks ago in Montana. He was down in the San Joaquin Valley. I mean, I just can't keep track. And of course, we're talking about Scott Laceth, the Sporting Chef. Good morning.
Good morning. And last week was the Peach Festival in Grand Junction, Colorado.
The Peach Festival.
Yes, the Palisade Peach Festival. Have you had a Palisade peach?
Probably. I don't really shop by brand name there?
They're exceptional peaches.
Okay. Colorado peaches.
Colorado peaches from Palisade, Colorado, pal, not just any.
I see.
Colorado
okay.
Peach.
Okay.
I you stand correct. Hmm? Are you going to go out? Are you going to go shoot a dove?
Well, unfortunately, the dove opener is on Friday this year, the 1st.
Yeah.
That puts me in a huge hole because, you know, I don't even start preparing the show until Friday afternoon so we can get the most current info here. And by trying to squeeze in a hunt in the morning with a little celebration after we come in and having to go clean up and come in here and then get to bed and get her, it's just not worth it. So I'm going to try to get out Saturday evening.
It's going to cut into two of those half days that you work every week.
Well, yeah. I mean,
you know, because a lot of us work a lot more than that. You know that, right?
I know. That's what I've heard.
Yeah. It should be good all weekend, I would imagine.
There seem to be a lot of birds around.
A lot of birds around. The weather conditions seems favorable. Looks like it's going to stay warm the whole way through.
There's no doubt you have a secret spot you'll be going.
You know, it's no secret if you know where it is. I think it's...
Can we quote you on that?
I know where it is. So I'm not telling you where it is, though, but I know where it is.
Okay.
But I do have my, you know, the standard recipe for doves is what? What do we do with
bacon
doves?
Wrapped anything.
Bacon wrapped anything, right? Which is good. And the guys that show up with the bacon wrapped deal and all that, they're very popular and everybody loves them. But I like to surprise people. I do dove lettuce cups. So,
oh, that's a good idea.
And you can chop them up or you can grind them or you can just leave them whole. But the tricky part is, have you ever tried to take a head of iceberg and make lettuce cups out of it? Because it's kind of, you know, you go to a restaurant and they're all very symmetrical and they look really good. But then you go get your own. You want to get a head of lettuce that's very loose. You don't want that really tight, heavy head of lettuce. You want loose head so you can pull the leaves off.
Without tearing them.
I normally start at the stem end and cut that out, cut a circle around that, and that way it makes it easier to pull the leaves out.
Oh, I gotcha, yeah.
And then if you want to make them symmetrical, you can take a pair of scissors and trim them up so they look like they do at Fats or wherever. Mm-hmm. And so hot wok or skillet, a couple tablespoons of vegetable oil, a little bit of sesame oil, throw in some chopped green onions, diced bell pepper, garlic, fresh ginger, just stir fry that for a couple of minutes, and then I take the dove breast that I've either chopped up, and if I've got a grinder going and I have enough dove breast, sometimes I'll just run it through a grinder and just barely cook it. I'm talking about 30 seconds to a minute. Throw in some soy sauce, a little rice vinegar. If you like, you can put some rice in there, which helps hold the thing together. Little water chestnuts for crunch. And that's it. You take your lettuce cup, you spread a little hoisin sauce on there, maybe a little Asian sweet chili sauce. Take your dove mixture and you put that right in the center and roll it up and eat it. It's really good. It's crunchy, it's juicy, and it's a little bit spicy from the Asian chili
sauce. Yeah, sounds great. Now, is that, by the time we get done grinding the dove, what do we have, like a coarse hamburger type thing?
Yeah, and you can just chop it with a knife, too, if you don't want to grind it.
Yeah.
But it's really good. And the reason I think a lot of people do the soak it in teriyaki, wrap it in bacon, jalapeno, cream cheese, and whatever is because they may have overcooked their dove. And an overcooked dove, to me, is not very good.
You know, the dove are like quail. If you're out camping, and I've done this, I'm sure you probably have, too, salt and pepper and a little olive oil, and you've got a wonderful tasting meal in front of you.
Yep. And on those quail, they should still be just a little pink at the thigh joint.
Yeah.
If you read a recipe that says cook them until the juice runs clear, there is no juice. They just have no fat on them. Somebody did that with a chicken and said, hey, why don't we do this with quail? Because it just doesn't work.
Well, you know, the Bob White quail are they tend to... really dry out quickly when you cook them. You got to be careful. So
No fat. Those are the quail I grew up with. I'm familiar with them.
Is this the on the website?
Well, of course it is.
I'm so sorry.
Sporting Chef website. I don't know why you'd even ask.
Okay. Lettuce wrapped dove, huh?
Yeah, something like that. It's in there.
Okay. Scott, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Good luck. Scott Lasif, thesportingchef.com. Well, this weekend is the big event up at Kittles Outdoor and Sports, the State Duck Calling Championship, today and tomorrow. And, of course, he combines this with his biggest sale of the year from now through September 2nd, which is a week from today, at the store. And, I mean, this is his biggest sale, and you're going to get the deepest discounts. But the whole point is this is a fun event to go to today and tomorrow. And, you know, we often talk about do duck callers really sound like ducks? Well, during this little interview I did with Pat last night, I had to give him a little hard time about it. Listen, Pat, once again, we're at the weekend. We have the State Duck Calling Championship in the park right across from your store in Colusa. We've got two series of events tomorrow, Saturday. What time do things get going?
8 o'clock we get sign up going, and 9 o'clock the program starts. So what's the first program? Well, it's opening ceremonies. We're building this up a little bit. We have the Sea Cadets from Yuba City that are doing a lot of our security, and they are going to be leading the Pledge of Allegiance. Then we've got a national anthem being sung by our guest from Missouri, Keith Allen, which will be entertaining. Yeah, it's really cool.
So when we get into the duck, when's the first duck calling event?
10 o'clock.
And that's who?
That is the regional championship right out of the blocks.
Okay. And we have a junior section that comes along in there too, right?
Correct, yeah. That day there's a junior and intermediate calling, and I believe an open spec that day.
Open spec calling thing, yeah.
Yeah.
More and more hunters are keying in on that spec. They know little subtle differences make all the difference in the world when you're in the field. So that's got to be getting more popular. How well do these juniors stack up against the pros? Are they getting pretty good at this?
Yeah, they are. They've, you know, with the modern technology, they've got some videos or soundtracks that they can mimic. And the ones that are into it really are studying it and practicing all year.
It's just like a musical instrument, huh?
It truly is. You know, the contest itself is not supposed to sound like a duck, and that's what people want to criticize, is that doesn't sound anything like a duck. But the judging is all about how the contestant controls the call with high notes, low notes, routine in between without squealing or squawking any sour notes.
Well, I mean, I'm just thinking, just being, you know, a kind of a little smartass here, I just thought that's like having a trumpet calling contest, but it doesn't have to sound like a trumpet, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if a trumpet has a dual purpose, you know, like a duck call.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of people want to learn how to call, and you'd think that judging would be combined the how they feel it would work in the field compared to the ability of the caller to manipulate the call.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just what it is, I guess, huh?
It is.
Because a lot of these callers are also very, very good duck hunters.
Oh, for sure. So mixed, you know, the two winners that out of the regional and the state that we get out of this weekend our Main Street calling that we send to Stuttgart for the World's Championship.
Yeah.
In between those two contests that produce those two winners, we have other contests, meat calling they call it, or where it is sounding like a real duck. However, there's not a World's contest in Stuttgart that we're sanctioned for to you know, pick a winner to go to.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha.
So. Okay. In between, there's a lot of other type of calling besides the annoying up and down the scale.
Okay. So Sunday is the final.
Sunday is the, right out of the block, Sunday morning is the state championship. And then we follow out through Sunday, finishing up with some of the meat calling. There's a real fun one to watch where they have a team live duck or meat calling. So two guys get on the stage and sound back and call back and forth with their calls and sounding like ducks, more than one duck in the field.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, it is fun. That's cool to watch. And there's a guy by the name of Brett Crow that has J.J. Lair's duck calling company now. And he has gone to the World Competition, which is back east in Maine, I believe, or Maryland. He's won that live duck calling contest where you sound like a duck, like three times the world championship.
Wow.
Three times.
Yeah. That's Pat Kittle of Kittle's Outdoor and Sport, and all that is happening today and tomorrow at the park right across the street from Kittle's in Colusa. You can call the store and find out more details at 530-458-4868. This last Wednesday, after listening to Mark Wilson catching all these stripers, a friend of mine and I went down. Actually, it was two boats. And we went down and fished below Rio Vista mostly, a little bit to the West Bank, Decker Island. That's where we got all our fish. We ended up, 8 to 10 keepers and about a half a dozen shakers, a few doubles. We lost some. Nothing big, 23 inches maybe. And that seemed like the standard, and the wind was troublesome, and that's why Mark wasn't there, because he was there the day before. But anyway, he went the day after. So let's find out how he did. Hi, Mark.
Then the day after that, too. And, you know, have I ever told you, Bob, I hate wind?
Weekly.
Yesterday, Decker Island area, man, it was calm, man. Just a slight breeze and hot all day long, and I said, wow, this is nice. Let's go down to Broad Slough there, see what's going on down there. Mistake. I made that little turn down there by Sherman, and it was into about 25-mile-an-hour rollers and white caps, and we got soaked to the socks again. So anyway, day yesterday was not very good.
Well, it was forecast to be, 12 to 15 miles an hour.
Well, Rio Vista Bridge, it might have been 2 to 3, but down there it was much stronger. And even up the lower San Joaquin, up by Antioch, still had a breeze pocket. But once you went up there by the barges across from False River and made that turn, it just flattened dead out, and it was hot all the way out of the upper river, got out of the wind channel, so... Anyway, yesterday was not a good day. I got two small keepers, a 23-incher and a 20-incher, and about 10 or 12 shakers. And I had one big one on. It took me into the grass and broke me off. And that was trolling rattle traps right up next to the weed lines in about 6 foot of water. But anyway, I don't know. I tried to pull it out, and it broke the line. So I must have had a weak spot in the line. Usually not normal. But during the week was the same thing that you had. Monday and Thursday was the same thing you had. Small fish, quite a few of them, double headers. I don't know. Tides got better, but the fishing got worse.
Yeah.
Just couldn't find a bite yesterday. I had some friends out there doing the same thing. I don't know how they resulted at the end of the day, but I think they caught probably 3 or 4 times as much as I did, but they went to different spots. I did find a couple of big schools, and one of them wouldn't bite, and the other one, I couldn't get them to go, and I worked them and worked them. I said, man, these fish, and they didn't move. They stayed right there. So I got the spoons out, and I spooned down on top of them. Ah, that changed the ticket. I was catching 6 inches 2 at a time. They were all small fish, so, I mean, really small.
Yeah.
They were too small to bite the lure.
Wow. Isn't that something? You know, here's something interesting, Mark. You know, I love that deep diving Yuzuri. I mean, that's a solid lure, and it really tracks well. And you can control the depth with the line you let out. Of course, like all your, but I know where it is, you know, and we were a long decker. And I caught a couple of fish on that. But then my friend started catching, he was getting more hits on Rebels. So I switched to Rebels, and we were getting doubles. And so when was the last time you used a Rebel? But here we were, and just so we could let out a little bit more line and fish maybe 10 or 11 feet, Rebels seemed to be the ticket there. And whereas the Yuzuri would want to dig into the bottom and pick up grass a little more often.
Yeah, well, that's why you got to shorten up on those. I'm running probably 60 feet, 65 feet with the Ozuris.
Yeah.
And if I go the feline predators or the Rebels run about the same depth, I'm running 100 feet out.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to run 40 more feet to get them down to the same depth. And my depth, I try to target around 12, 13 feet. I get into 11. I get out to 14, 15. But I try to work around that 12, 13 seems to be where the fish are landing.
That's exactly what my thought was. But we were finding the fish. There was more fish in that 10, 11 feet than there was 14 and 14 feet. So that's why
you know, when the current runs stronger, they go tighter to the rocks.
Yeah.
You're right. And you found, but I don't tell my friends that.
I won't tell them either. Anyway, it was a good combination, and the best color for us was anything with an orange belly.
Orange belly with a green back, or I don't know, red and white still working good for me.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So anyway,
but not yesterday.
So we're just gonna have to wait for the big fish. My goodness.
I think you go 2 or 3 days with these small fish, and then one of the days the guys will catch some nice fish. Keep a bunch of 5 to 7 pound fish for the box and. Anyway, I haven't been able to get into that for a while, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
But I'm getting ready to expand a little further down. I think these little fish are starting to disappear. I don't know if I told you, I'm going to have some cataract surgery here in a short time, and I'm going to be laid up for a while, so I won't be talking with you probably for a week or so.
Can I use your boat?
Wait a minute.
Can I use your boat and all your tackle and
sure.
lures? It's okay.
Sure,
okay.
I'll let you use it.
All right.
The keys in it. Just drive it off.
Okay.
Well, I went through some shallow water the other day in Lower Skag. I polished it real good. There's no paint on it. It was about 2 foot of water. I went through it about 30 miles. An hour.
There you go.
I knew it was there, but I didn't think it was that shallow. But anyway, stainless steel is still polished. It's okay on the prop.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, that Lower Skag, it lost a lot of paint on both sides.
Oh, so well.
I'm probably gouging the clam beds about 6 inches.
Well, that's what it's there for, to protect things. So.
I can remember going down the Loch Lomond and coming out of there, and the guys didn't stay in the channel. You could see all the prop ditches
across
the shallow water.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's what I did.
Well, when are you going to have the surgery, Mark?
Actually, the surgery date is the 7th of September,
okay.
But I got a pre-op to go to and a bunch of eye drops to start taking and take easy and off of some pills and on some others.
Okay.
And then I've got probably a week or so of recoup after that.
Yeah. Will you be fishing this week at all?
I am.
Okay.
This upcoming week, I'm going to get out at least one time. I'm going to. And that's it. I'm not booking any more friends to go with me because I got this upcoming. So, but we'll be able to talk next week.
Good deal. We'll look forward to it.
And go get them, guys. The weather's good right now.
Okay, the wind seems to be down this morning down there. So
it's supposed to be that way the next couple of days. So this weekend, other than being hot, maybe the winds will let you out. But there's fish around. Just got to work for them.
Thanks, Mark.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Mark Wilson, leading the way for the striper fishing like he always does. Okay, after the break, we may talk about Poudre Creek. It's close to everybody. You may be surprised when you find out what is in Poudre Creek in the way of trout. Don't go away. that event you just heard about at Rahaga's, that's happening this weekend with the big barbecue tomorrow. And they always have a great time. They really put on the food bag, and they've got raffles. And, I mean, it's a good time. And all the proceeds go to cancer. So there. Okay. Well, Poudre Creek was a real a waste of a stream years ago. It was just, it just wasn't very nice. We didn't have a good water flow. There was trout in there. There was a few big trout. The Department of Fish and Wildlife planted trout in there. It was not very managed very well. And then things changed. We had an organization come in. I think it's called the Poudre Creek Trout Restoration Projects. And they got fly shops involved. And anyway, they've really made a difference in that creek. And I talked to Paul Berliner. There's an event coming up 2 weeks from today. He's the president of the Fly Fishers of Davis, and he's up to speed on this whole event. Listen. Paul, there's a very interesting little festival coming up September 9th in Davis and put on by your organization, the Fly Fishers of Davis. And it's all about Poudre Creek. Of course, a few years ago, it was designated a wild trout and then a trophy trout and catch and release. And I used to object to that because it was so close to the Bay Area. And I said, my goodness, you're taking the closest trout stream away. But I think with the restoration efforts you guys have done and the results and this day of conservation, I think I've done a 180 on that whole thing. I saw, Paul, where a 2014 estimate had the number of wild trout in that at close to 3,000 trout per mile. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a remarkable number. Of course, the survey was back in 2014.
Yeah.
And I think the increase in the population is really due to the change in policy on Poudre Creek and the conservation efforts that are underway. It's a remarkable number. They're tough. They are tough fish to catch. They're wily. But the population is increasing, and with their efforts on increasing spawning beds as well, it's a wonderful number.
Well, you know, these fish, at least a few big fish have always been there. And, you know, I've caught a couple years and years ago, but I had a friend also years ago that used to specialize in that creek. He'd put a canoe in just to get across the river to fish behind an island or something where nobody could fish. He would catch 20-inch rainbows, for crying out loud, on a fly rod. And it's just like magical stuff. And now there's a lot more fish than there used to be. What's the latest? How are you guys doing? I mean, it's a better, I'm sure, cold weather fishery than it is a warm weather fishery. What kind of fish are you catching out of there now?
It's all of the the wild coastal rainbows are being caught. I don't think a brown or a brookie has been seen in the creek for quite a while.
Uh-huh.
But the restoration efforts are mainly to protect the wild coastals. And they've done a lot of work on the spawning beds. They've tried to increase side channels. And you know, Bob, one of the challenges, of course, with an amazing winter we just had is siltation can come down. It can scour the spawning beds away. So there's a lot of efforts that the organization, Poudre Creek Trout, is trying to keep that restored, get rid of native plants, invasive species and replace those with native plants.
Yeah.
Increase the trails, increase the access, and just attempt to protect the fishery. It's as you mentioned, one of the closest places to, certainly for us here in Sacramento Valley.
Sure.
But also Bay Area folks find out a very close destination to do some trophy fly fishing.
You mentioned coastal rainbows. Are you referring to steelhead?
Steelhead have not been seen in Poudre Creek, but with the restoration efforts, they've actually seen some Chinook salmon down in the lower reach.
Below Lake Solano.
Yes, below Lake Solano. You wonder how the heck they get up there.
But they're amazing.
In fact, they do find their way, and we'd love to see that increase.
Yeah. But basically, you're managing above Solano in what we know as the, quote, trout water between there and Monticello Dam as a resident wild trout fishery.
Correct. There's the area between the diversion dam and the Monticello Dam is called the reach. And in that Peter Creek reach is where all of the management efforts, or most of them, are taking place.
What size of fish have you been taking out of there, or catching and releasing, I should say?
Sure. You know, anywhere from a 12-incher, and if perhaps you've got the assistance of one of the guides that works the area, there are some trophy 30-inchers up there.
30-inchers. You're talking about
that would be a trophy day. It's not been one of my trophy days.
That's like an 8 or 9 pound rainbow.
Sure, sure. And they're in that. They're mostly above, between the area right above Solano Dam, up to the bridge that crosses the highway, and then all the way up to the dam itself.
Well, this whole festival is a benefit. You've got films there. You've got the whole fly fishing thing. And it's more than fly fishing because it's a great conservation story. Fishing booths, beverages, music, casting, raffles, the whole works. And it's $20, and I guess local fly shops have tickets?
Local fly shops do. It is more than just showing a movie. It's we're trying to. I think we'll even have someone helping us tie flies for the kids, casting contests and demonstrations. $20 to get into the movie itself, and not only will the Orvis Down the Hatch movie be shown, but we're going to premiere a 10-minute mini documentary on Peter Creek trout itself.
As Paul Berliner will give you a few details after the news break. On when and where and where you can get tickets, but pretty 9 pound rainbows in Poudre Creek. Don't go away. Welcome back to the third hour of the KPK Outdoor Show. I'm Bob Sims. Saturdays 5 to 8 on KFPK, 1530 AM and 93.1 FM. To finish up on the Poudre Creek thing, you know, that is that's a great success story. And this is a fundraiser, but they really make it interesting. It happens 2 weeks from today in Davis at the Veterans Memorial Theater. Tickets are $20. You can get them at Fly Fishing Specialties in Citrus Heights or Keeney's on Marconi in Sacramento. But, you know, I mean, there's fly fishing booths, and there's tying, and there's casting and raffles, and this is the way they raise money. Now, this is what they've done so far. Since it's been a wild trout stream, it took years and years working with you-know-who to get that. And there's now, they estimate from 2014 up to 3,000 trout per mile in that stream. And they talk about the coastal steelhead, the coastal rainbow, which I assume they're referring to the descendants of the steelhead that used to come up there before they built Monticello Dam and created Lake Berryessa. Anyway, they do grow big. And like he says, there's some fish 30 inches. Now that's an 8 or 9 pound rainbow. So anyway, again, this is happening 2 weeks from today. And you can find out more about it from Fly Fishing Specialties or Keeney's. Okay? All right. I talked to, we talk about Lake Albemarle a lot, but we don't talk much about the streams that come into it. So I talked to Tom Momonier from the Lake Albemarle Fly Fishing Company and Thirsty Trout Pub. Tom, I know it's a little early for us to be talking about fly fishing in Lake Albemarle proper, but just for the heck of it, anything going on in Lake Albemarle proper?
Yeah, wherever the cold water is, the fish are in there. Big Springs, Hamilton Branch, Bailey Springs, Mouth of the Feather, that's where the fish are. They're just they get a lot of pressure right now, and they're hard to catch.
You know, you mentioned the Mouth of the Feather. That's all a big, pretty flat, shallow area. Are the fish in that, or because of the cold water, or where are you talking about specifically?
They are are in that, but not the numbers they used to be, because like you said, it's a flat now. Back in the day, it used to be a really nice channel. The channel is kind of filled in right now, and there's a few fish, but the bigger numbers are over in Big Springs and Hamilton Branch.
Yeah. And Big Springs, I mean, the springs should be flowing, although it comes up underneath the surface of the water. It should have been replenished this year, at least to a certain extent.
Oh, yeah, they're really going now.
Yeah. And up to Hamilton Branch, you know, there's little roads you can take and get an access back in there and work a couple riffles and, you know, a lot of growth in the river back up in there. Still okay, fishable, though?
Yes, it is. The only problem is they are repairing the bridge on the way to Clear Creek, so you have to come in the back way through Westwood, which into Westwood Springs in that area, which is fishing decently.
Yeah, but you could direct people if they stopped in the shop.
Absolutely.
Okay. And, you know, the North Fork of the Feather above the town of Chester, that used to be a pretty stable trout stream where, you know, you could catch a few smaller fish. If you were lucky, you'd get maybe one or two fish in the 14 to 15-inch class, and you'd always see at least one bigger. Has it changed from that?
No, I think that's still true. I think we catch a more smaller fish. You can go up right now and probably catch a dozen, you know, 8 to 10-inch fish,
yeah.
Maybe a 14 or 16 here and there, and see with the one big one, like you said. But that's kind of the state of it now.
Yeah. But, you know, you go along that river, and all of a sudden, you can get lost back in there if you're trying to stay on that river, because all of a sudden there's a fork coming in here, a fork coming in there, and all of a sudden it's not the Feather anymore.
Right. And then, you know, there's a lot of alders, too. Those really have overgrown, and there's a lot of that stuff you get in and you can't get out of it.
Yeah. Very hard to fish, but good fish habitat protects them.
Yeah, it keeps that water cool, too.
Yeah, yeah. And then you get up to what is it, Warner Valley Creek?
Right, and Warner's actually fishing pretty well right now. It's the highest I've ever seen it, you know, and we're almost in September.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's fishing. There's a lot bigger pools now, and the fish are starting to adapt to it.
Yeah, now that's the extension of the stream that comes out of the park there where it's hot water.
Mm-hmm.
How far down, when does that water cool off enough to sustain trout? Is it in the park before it leaves the park, or is it outside the park?
Right outside the park. It's where what happens is Kings Creek goes in with that Boiling Springs Creek, and that really cools it down.
Yeah.
Earlier in the year, that's really the only place that fishes well, up in that warmer water. It's almost like a mini fire hole.
Yeah.
In Montana. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure the fish move up and down a little bit in there, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. When should we target Lake Almanor itself? Sell for some fly fishing?
I'm thinking the end of September, middle of September. It should be a really good fall. Historically, we have high water years. The fall is excellent. So I'm thinking, you know, middle of September till Thanksgiving should be off the hook.
That's Tom Momignier of Lake Almanor Fly Fishing Company. His number, 530-258-3944. He's on the south side of the street in the town of Chester. You know, I was reading a release from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. It says, Wildlife Conservation Board funds environmental improvement and acquisition projects. Now, this is the Wildlife Conservation Board. They get their money from bond measures approved by voters, and these bonds are sold under the auspices of protecting California's natural resources. Let me just give you a few examples. $317,000 to East Contra Costa County Habitat Conservancy. It's a cooperative project, East Bay Regional Park District, to acquire approximately 40 acres of land for the protection, preservation of blah, 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 blah. Basically, it's on the slopes of Mount Diablo. $317,000. Not a bad project. Yeah, $1.6 million grant to the Department of Water Resources for a cooperative project for the Fish and Wildlife to construct public access and habitat enhancements to a gravel pit pond adjacent to San Joaquin River. $1.6 million. $1.4 million grant to the Regents at the University of California to construct an administrative and meeting hall down in Santa Barbara on the Sedgwick Reserve. a $384,000 grant to the Chaparral Lands Conservancy for a project within the California Department of Parks to restore 5 acres of sensitive vernal pool and maritime succulent scrub habitats on City of San Diego Park and Recreation Park. Okay, $384,000. Here's the beauty. A $20 million grant to assist a cooperative project in the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy and another group, authority to acquire a multi-purpose easement over approximately 9 acres of land for habitat restoration, open space, blah, blah, blah. $20 million for an easement over 9 acres? I smell a rat. After the break, we'll talk to Dan Paganelli about a Fishing in the City project going on today. One of the more worthwhile programs of the Department of Fish and Wildlife is Fishing in the City, and there's an event today, and Don Paganelli joins us now to tell us more about it. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Bob.
Florin Creek Park, where is that?
That's in the south area. Pomegranate and Persimmon would be the corners. It's on Persimmon. It's a really nice park. They've completely renovated this whole thing over here. There's already a bunch of people here getting ready. They try to do it kids only till about 12, and they have a little sign up and a little raffle. It's the Southgate Parks and Recreation that puts it together. They do a really good job. We've got 1,000 pounds of catfish stocked in there. So we're hoping for a real good catch rate.
On the corner of Pomegranate and Persimmon.
Yes.
Everybody knows where that is.
Well, if you came up Mack Road on Center Parkway,
uh-huh,
and you make a right on Pomegranate and follow it all the way down, it'll tee at Persimmon, and you make a left, and the park will be on your left-hand side.
Okay, and we can just Google Florin Creek Park.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So that's great that it's kids only. From what age group, Don?
I think up to 15 years old, which is, you know, before you need a license.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's very cool. And if this is like any of the others, there's going to be a lot of kids with a lot of fun with those catfish.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so. And we also put about 1,000 pounds of catfish in Elk Grove Park also, just to kind of make the adults happy if they can't fish here.
Okay. Well, they can fish afternoon, right?
Oh, yeah. But we get a lot of the public that comes out here and realizes, well, they can't fish till after 12 o'clock, so they get a chance to go right down the street here to Elk Grove Park and fish.
Okay. Well, that's a good deal. I'm glad they do that. I mean, you can either enjoy in the festivities. Of course, you're going to be out there. You're going to be loaning rods and reels, the whole drill, giving instructions, helping them cast, bait the hook, everything, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep, we're getting the rods ready as we speak, and we got night crawlers and probably a little bit of hot dog and all the good stuff those catfish like. But you'd be surprised how many catfish are caught on hot dogs, and I think you know that.
Hey, listen, having a boat on the Delta, I'm quite aware of that. They love hot dogs.
Yes, they do. But, no, it should be a real fun day. It's a beautiful morning. And like I said, there's already a bunch of people getting their spots all lined up here on the pond, and they're going to start the fishing, I think, at 8:30. We're going to try to put on a clinic ahead of time here between 8 and 8:30 and get the kids started. Anybody that needs to borrow a rod will have it. There's a lot of people that have their own stuff, which is fine. And a lot of people go out and buy stuff, and then they bring it to us, and we'll put it together. So
that's
just
great.
Trying to get the kids going.
Yeah. Hey, if we can get off that just for a minute. I know you went over to Berryessa recently and you got some nice fish, some decent fish. I think you were spooning over there, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Drop shot. We caught most of them.
Drop shot. Okay.
I'm going up there again tomorrow, hoping to find that spoon bite.
Okay. And then Folsom, you went up there about a week ago, and you caught some fish, but no big ones, you know. I mean, like no 4-pounders or anything. But Folsom, it beats to its own drummer. When do you think, what's the turning point where Folsom becomes a little bit better lake to fish for bass?
Hopefully we get that surface temperature to drop down a little bit, get those fish a little bit more active chasing all that bait that I keep seeing. We hope for a good fall bite. We always hope for a good fall bite.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we start to look for before winter sets in. Those fish want to feed pretty hard before the winter sets in on them. So that can usually be a really good time up there.
Hey Don, you think we're going to start to notice a change to where a little bit better bass fishing, say in a couple of weeks from now, with a little lower temperatures?
Well, I would hope so, but they're calling for 100-degree days now for the next week, just about. So
it's not fair.
No. So you can never really predict it, Bob. We just kind of try to keep a pulse on it and kind of see where it's going. And I'll keep you posted.
Okay,
on all that.
All right, Don. Hey, thanks for coming on, and thanks for helping everybody out there today.
No problem. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Don Paganelli. Florin Creek Park, kids only up to 15 until noon, then it's everybody's. Everybody's can get in on. Talk to Val Aubrey about the latest on Eagle Lake. Val, last week you made really a good point when we talked about the differences in this year and last year. Of course, last year was so difficult on Eagle Lake, and you came up with the saying that I thought was right on. You just had to get to learn how to fish the lake under those conditions that seem to be drought-induced, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
And now you've done that. You're fishing shallower. Water temperature is less of a factor than clarity. So that was a good – you're actually catching fish shallower than you did under clear conditions. But now we have to look at late August and early September – and temperatures start to drop. What do those fish do when that starts to happen?
Well, you know, Bob, what we need in order to get these fish moving, that's what they're going to do. And they are antsy right now. I got to have at least 3 back-to-back morning temperatures below 40 degrees to start cooling off that shallower water in tight and shallow.
Okay.
And
has that happened yet?
That, no. Well, you know, today was number one. You know, day one.
Okay.
And if I go back up to 45-50, I'm going to have to wait for another set of 3 days below 40. So, but, you know, we are cooler now than, of course, when we were in July. We're peaking at, you know, 72, pushing 73 down in the South Basin, which we were above that, you know, 75, even up to 76 in late July.
Yeah.
So, you know, we are cooling slightly.
Yeah.
Now but we really need to drop below 70 for, you know, 5 days. You know, 68 degrees is really going to start.
And that should be happening anytime now.
Anytime now.
Yeah. And you mentioned before we started this that you were out scouting today and came back to your haunts at Pelican and caught fish.
No, I came back to my haunts at Wildcat.
I mean Wildcat.
Yes, I was up to Pelican. I did some scouting. I spent about 3 hours scouting up there, which I've done for the last 3 weeks. One day a week, I've been scouting just to see what's going on. And I don't have the fish there yet. Water temperature was still pushing 72, you know, so that was still pretty warm for getting them to move up into the shallows.
Okay. So the depth, you're still catching them?
Basically, I'm working, you know, 24 to 40 feet of water, 17 to 23 feet deep.
Orange still the color?
The red has been my color.
Oh, the red and gold, yeah.
Yeah, red and gold. Then some other folks been throwing some blues at them. They were on blue the last few days too. So at least we are getting to see some changes, and we're getting more options.
And that's the Thomas Buoyant and Speedy Shiner lures that seem to be working. Check our website, eaglelakefishing.net, for Eagle Lake. That's Val Aubrey. Well, the ocean fishing down off San Francisco continues to be good. Every time it slows down, it bounces back. I talked to R.J. Waldron, who skippers the Sundance six-packer out of Emeryville. R.J., we had, I think for the second time this season, another little lull in the action. And for the second time this season, it just came roaring back to where the party boats are getting, if they're not getting full limits, they're coming awful close, and most of the six-packers are getting their limits. So it's a pretty amazing run of fishing we have, considering this is late August, don't you think?
I think it's really good. We did hit a little lull last week, and, you know, I think a lot of people were kind of thinking maybe we're going to slow down, and, you know, we might be kind of nearing the end of the big shot. And I'll tell you what, on, let's see, over the weekend, it was Sunday, Monday. Yeah, Monday it started picking back up, and it was like we're back to how we were, you know, last month. Full limits for a lot of the boats, and, again, there was fish. I know today I just talked to a guy on our dock here. He had fish at Duxbury, and we fished today at Pedro Point. So, again,
the whole gamut from north to south.
That's right.
That's what's really amazing. I mean, usually by this, I mean, Muir Beach comes into play, and maybe out to number two or number three channel buoy and off the north bar, but not that far.
Yeah, there was fish at the channel buoys again today. But, you know, you mentioned Muir Beach last week when we talked, and again, we still have not seen that. You know, and it could be that no one's really put a lot of time in it because we've been fishing other places, but from Muir Beach to Rocky Point's been kind of a dead zone, I can say that. I know that, you know, a few fish have been caught there, but the fleet hasn't been there yet. And I know a lot of guys are waiting for that to happen. But the last 3 days we've been at Muscle Rocks and the Divide and right in front of the pier. People went up to the channel today after it kind of petered out there. Then some guys went to Pedro. That's where we ended up. We ended up at Pedro Point, and we had a little pick, you know, for an hour or two, and then the fish came up, and we had them bam, bam, bam. They were biting really well, and it was the same thing at the channel.
So they came up shallow?
Yeah, they did. They came up shallow. We had them, you know, for anywhere from 25 pulls to 40 pulls. Same kind of action was going on at the end of the channel. And so, you know, it was like the first half of the incoming tide. That the fish came up today. Water conditions were a little bit rolly in the morning, but then it started laying out tomorrow. It looks like it's going to be really good weather. You know, throughout the whole weekend, it looks like it's going to be good weather.
Yeah, what's the forecast into the first part of next week?
You know, I haven't looked at the, you know, because we go every day, but I haven't looked at the beginning of next week, but the weekend looks good, which I think everyone's happy about, so.
R.J. Waldron, who skippers the Sundance. It's a six-packer out of Emeryville. Here's Emeryville's number to book R.J., area code 510-652-3403. Better get with it. Fishing is still good, but it's not going to last that way forever. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, now we've heard about the Feather River. That has had a big upswing this last week. A lot of people there, too. Rob Reimers just texted me, said about 20 boats out in his area this morning. And they're catching fish at the mouth of the American. There's even some salmon up in the American, which is expected because of the increased flows down the American, although they're probably not American river fish. Now let's go up north, and I talked to Mike Bogue of Mike Bogue's Guide Service about the Redding Red Bluff area. Mike, you with a lot of your friends are sitting here waiting, wondering where the fish are, and we've talked a little bit about, you know, it could be just a late season up there, and we're always trying to rationalize things, but never have I seen the numbers of fish taken in the ocean this late in August, so that's at least one good sign, right?
Well, yeah, at least you got to think those fish are going to end up here eventually.
Sure. You've had late years before. I mean, you know, usually you're done with your fresh fall run. The new fish come in, what, about mid-October?
Yeah, yep.
But you've had years where you've caught fresh fish into how late?
Oh, first week in November.
Yeah, so this could be one of those years.
Hope so.
Because everybody says, well, it should have been going 2 or 3 weeks ago, so that would put us right on. But you've seen a change, haven't you, Mike, with more fish in the river?
Yeah, every time I go, there's more fish. You know, we're not catching limits by no means, but we're, you know, catching, you know, a fish here and there, and there's more fish, you know, every day, really.
Yeah. Of course, the fish this time of year are really in wonderful shape. How big are they running?
Nothing huge so far. You know, there's been a lot of jacks so far. And, you know, and the biggest fish I've seen probably is 15, 18 pounds.
Uh-huh.
But those big ones are on their way sooner or later.
Yeah, sooner or later. And what's the bite been on, roe or flatfish? I know you pull flatfish, and what seems to be
typically
working?
Typically, the early morning, flatfish seem to be working good, and then switches over to roe sometime after the sun comes, it hits the water.
Yeah.
They seem to bite that better.
And then as we get into the season, that might vary a little bit.
It could vary. I mean, there's years where there are years for sure that, you know, they bite lures better most of the day, and some years they bite eggs better. You just never know what they're going to bite in any given year, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, that's kind of is what makes fun out of it, right?
Yep, it does.
You've been trout fishing too, Mike. How's that been going?
Trout fishing has been really good. They've had a really good trout season, and, you know, same as always, you know, 18 to 30 a day, you know, up to the big fish, you know, 24, 23 inches, pretty regular.
Boy, that's nice up in that. That's close to 4 pounds, huh?
It is. Those are dandy fish. You know, a 22-incher pretty much anywhere is a pretty good fish.
Oh, yeah.
For a rainbow.
Yeah. And how are you catching those?
Maglips. I've been just backtrolling maglips for those lately. A little later, we'll switch over to glowbugs, you know, and drift those with when the salmon start spawning.
Yeah.
But right now, they've been biting those maglips.
That's Mike Bogue of Mike Bogue's Fishing, and his number is 530-246-8457. It's the same thing as the mag lips is like a back trolling a Brad's or a hot shot or something like that. You can go to Yakima Bait, and look up mag lips. I think they come in 5 different sizes, from 2.5 inches up to 5 inches, and they go from 8 to 20 feet deep. So kind of a different thing. Just got a call from a text from Tim Fesco over at the Meadow Cliff Lodge and RV on Highway 395. He says the water has dropped in the West Walker, and fishing is good. His guests that come there every year are catching 10 to 12 fish a day, and are all getting fish up. That's good fishing on the West Walker. We'll be right back.
Hello, Sacramento. We're...
Well, the Trinity River is open for another week for salmon. The 31st, I talked to Tim Brady at Trinity Outdoors about it. Well, Tim, the Trinity River releases for the hoopa dance down at Tishtang, way down river. Released a lot of water down the river. I'm sure that's going to help bring fish into the Klamath, especially steelhead and everything. But we're talking salmon since you have a week left. The flows are back down to normal as of yesterday. Have you seen anything that's positive?
No. Haven't seen anything that's negative. But yesterday afternoon, she hit back to the 450. And today... I didn't talk to anybody that had been out on the river.
Okay.
So whether more fish moved up or what fish were here moved on up into the hatchery, I don't know.
Hmm. Well, I would just have to wait and see.
Yep.
You know, you would hope that You know, I guess it's expected any fish down either in the canyon or down by Junction or just below there would shoot up to the hatchery with that kind of a flow. But it also makes sense if there was fish down below, like down in the by Burnt Ranch and Grays Falls and all that, that it would take them a little time to get upriver once the flow's reduced.
Well, although it doesn't take as long as one might think. If they really want to get someplace, they can cook.
Yeah. So, but we have until the 31st to fish for them, and then it's steelhead or nothing. Any word on any steelhead?
Oh yeah, there has been. They tag along with any time I think there's salmon moving up through the system. There's almost always going to be some steelhead hot on their heels.
Yeah, it seems to be the way it goes. So.
Yeah.
You go out and hit all the good choice spots, and you got a shot at least hooking something, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
How's Lewiston fishing since it's been finally fishable?
Well, I think they dumped a bunch of planters in there in the last week or so. So
yeah.
that should be the spot for the power bait.
There you go. There you go. How about Trinity? The Kokanee Bite still holding up?
Kokanee Bite seems to be, one day it'll be good, and then another day it's not so good. I saw a picture, though, the other day of these guys, and it reminded me of those pictures you see of guys that go out on those long-range boats out of San Diego, and they're all standing knee-deep in tuna on the back deck. These guys had, like, 16, 18-inch Kokanee piled up. They must have all had 10 apiece.
Wow.
And it was a very impressive, it was sort of.
Yeah. So how big do you think they're, did you say 18 inches?
Yeah, these things were pigs.
Huh.
And the guy said that the deal was his fishing down there around 80 feet or so.
Yeah.
He sort of seemed to think that the 15 inchers and stuff were maybe in the 60 foot range.
That was kind of what happened earlier to a guy that. Kirk Portocarrero, who went over there, they just decided to go down to 110 feet, and boom, they found not only kokanee, but bigger kokanee than they'd been catching at 60 and 70.
Yeah, and some of the kings, too.
Yeah, and then speaking of that, have they caught any kings?
Yeah, but that seems to happen at the deeper they fish.
Yeah. Any size of the kings?
Oh, 3-4 pounders.
That's Tim Brady of Trinity Outdoors. He's open every day in Weaverville, 530-623-4999. Kokanee close to 18 inches in Trinity. You know, it's been such a slug all these years. You know, it's hard to catch a kokanee over 8 inches in that. All of a sudden this year, that all changed. It just shows you how things cycle there. And here's another lake, and my apologies for not reporting on it more often, but Hellhole Reservoir. Now, that's a lake known for big browns, a few wild rainbows, some Mackinac, but of course they've had kokanee for years. I had a friend that went up there with his wife, and they got kokanee measured to 18 inches in a Hellhole last week. So take that in consideration. Few other things before the Labor Day weekend comes up. You just heard from Tim Fesco, or I just told you that his guests over at Meadowcliff Lodge and RV are really experiencing some great fishing in the West Walker River. It has dropped even further, and they put a ton of fish in that from top to bottom. I mean, clear on down to the town of Colville, almost to Topaz Lake, the whole thing is fishing good because of the extra water. And I was up at Pickle Meadows last week, and they're catching fish way up there. It's just so beautiful up in that wide open country up there. Just watch out for the Marines running down, blocking a full lane of the highway that goes over to Sonora, and you'll be fine because that's where they do their exercises. Anyway. Also, Markleyville, they're going to be putting in some big plants in both the East Fork and the West Fork of the Carson Rivers this coming week in anticipation of the Labor Day weekend, of course, which is next weekend. and that'll be the last big crowded weekend of the year. As usual, Northern California has really been cheated out of a viable trout plant program this year, with lots of excuses, some good reasons, but a lot more excuses coming out of the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Well, areas to the south are being planted every week. Just doesn't seem fair. But remember, if the forecasts are true, it's going to be hot all week long. Head to the high country or the coast, and have a good week, everyone.